Last night, the men's collegiate basketball season ended with Louisville as the new champs. Louisville's women's team faces off against Connecticut as the women's tournament winds up tonight. As the long season wound down, Stephen Dunn published a piece on a blog called SB Nation about his basketball career at Hofstra University and the links between his time on the court, his time on the bench, and eventual career as a poet. Almost everyone who plays in high school or college learns that they will never make a living in professional sports. What did that realization teach you? Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Stephen Dunn is a Pulitzer Prize-winning poet and author, most recently of Here and Now, Poems. He joins us from his home in Frostburg, Maryland. Thanks very much for being with us today.
Happy to be with you.
And in your sophomore year, you write that you were the best shooter on the team, second highest scorer. Your nickname was Radar, but that you learned more your junior year when, in fact, you rode the bench.
Mostly rode the bench, yeah, I did. There was a guy on the team who I had played against in practice, and he was a freshman. And at that time, freshmen couldn't play varsity ball. So I knew that the following year he'd be playing, and probably in place of me. And he did. He was better than I. And I had to develop an inner life, I think, to deal with it all.
An inner life. So you didn't read on the bench, surely?
No, but one thought on the bench. One realized where one was in relation to a certain excellence. And he had real excellence. And I was pretty good. That was the difference.
And
the coach knew the difference, of course.
You had an interesting coach, too.
Yes, Butch Van Bredekoff.
He would later go on from Hofstra to coach at Princeton, where he had a player by the name of Bill Bradley.
Yes, and then on to the Lakers as well. He was quite interesting as a man and a very good coach, I think.
And it's interesting, when you came to that realization, your relative excellence, because, as you say, at that level, you were pretty good. But nevertheless, what happened to you mentally?
I think for a while I was depressed and got over it pretty quickly. It wasn't useful. I played in schoolyards all my life against good players, and one knows where one is in relation to another that way, and that was something to adjust to. It had happened before. It was only a little humiliating at first because I had been a good scorer before that, and it was really a decision of Van Bredekoff's to play a little guy who is a good teammate and a good distributor of the ball in place of me. There was an argument as to whether this guy I'm talking about, who was very good, Richie Swartz, whether he and I should play together, and many people thought so.
Mm-hmm.
But Van Bredekoff didn't think so. And at our reunion in 1999, he brought it up and, in fact, said, well, you know, 23-1, which was his way of saying I made the right decision.
And did winning, in fact, that was a very good Hofstra team, did winning make it easier to accept the fact that you were not playing as much as you used to?
I suppose. I don't remember that well. It was very hard to argue with. You know, we were good. Swartz was terrific. It was clear, quite clear. And you know, you just yield to it.
What you? I think you were a history student at the time.
I was a history major, yes.
And what did you think you were going to do with the rest of your life?
Well, I think if I had kept on playing basketball and started, I probably would have been a gym teacher. I probably would have thought I would do that, or teach history, perhaps in high school. And you know, most of our paths are crooked paths, I think, and mine is a very crooked path toward being a poet. We didn't have any books in our house, and I was a first-generation college student. It was all accommodation, And then a lot of luck, you know, getting lucky to run into good teachers. And I had one literary friend who was Sam Toporoff, a novelist, and he conferred that my work was at least doable. and that was important to me at the time. And I don't, if he had said otherwise, I don't know what I would have done. But I went to Spain to write. I quit my job in New York, went to Spain to see if I could write, and wrote a bad novel full of language, all about me, you know, the way first novels can be, a real dull novel, and threw it away. But it was full of language, and I realized I should be writing poetry and started writing poetry.
Oh, so going for the big bucks.
Yes. Right.
And that realization eventually led to a career as a poet, and I was making a joke there, but it's got other rewards, I suspect.
Oh, lots of rewards. My life, one of the reasons I quit my job at Nabisco is that I didn't want to be any of those people who, when I grew up, sounds a little melodramatic, but it was true, and to have been around poets, even though, you know, poets are as complicated and often disagreeable as any group of people. I'm so happy that I found most of my friends that way, and through athletics too.
Hmm. You were at Nabisco. You were not doing something interesting like baking Fig Newtons, though.
No, I was writing little notes and brochures to salesmen about Triscuits and things like that.
Hmm. We're talking with the...
An easy life to improve upon.
We're talking with the Pulitzer Prize winner, Stephen Dunn, about how his career in basketball led eventually to poetry, principally when he understood that he was not as good as some of the other players who were on the team as well. We want to hear what you learned when you made that realization, if you played sports in high school or in college. And we'll start with Edward. Edward's on the line with us from Tallahassee.
Hey, Neil. Thanks for taking my call. And I think I have a few things in common with your guest in that our lives generally are made up of cricket paths. I played Division I-A football, and I thought I was pretty good at it. But around sophomore year, I ended up getting married, and that changed my availability for football. And so I guess I came to the realization that it was going to be more than I could handle to juggle the two. But I didn't want to give up this hope or the dream of playing in the NFL, so I was kind of slow to come to terms with that. Eventually, you know, and I too studied history in undergrad, and I left school and taught middle school social studies for a little while before returning. Now, ironically, now I work as a tutor in the athletic department and completing a PhD, but nevertheless, I work with a lot of students, and they have the same hopes and dreams. We all went to school knowing that it was just going to be a temporary holdover until we went to the professional ranks or whichever sport it was that we're in. And one of my initial sermons to my students is that, you know, we're here to help you prepare for the day that the game ends. I'm not going to tell you when that's going to be, but it's going to end. And I think that as young guys, none of us really even consider that there's not going to be the prospect of us going on to play in the NFL or whichever sport, you know.
Yeah, the game will end when you're inducted in Canton.
right. That's what we all believe. But again, I enjoy the challenge now of trying to get student athletes to at least make that small investment in their education, because, you know, being an older guy now, I know that it ends, but it's hard to tell whether it's a female athlete or otherwise. They tell these kids that, you know, the game is going to end at some point, you know, so, you know, start to kind of look forward and, you know, decide on some other things that might make you happy in life in regards to careers.
And so you're gratified with the decisions you made?
I am very gratified. You know, I didn't set out to become an educator. Again, I knew I was a very good athlete in Florida. I ran track and did a lot of other sports and was highly recruited. So, you know, I never really considered anything other than playing sports. And when that ended, I had to do something. And I went into education because I enjoyed school and I enjoyed working with students. And I didn't know that that would bring me full circle back into school and pursuing a doctorate now. But I am very satisfied with those choices because it's allowed me, in a sense, to remain around the game because I'm having the opportunity to work with athletes, you know, in the tutoring department. And I also have some of them in some of the classes that I teach. So I'm still around the university. Still around the sport, but just in another capacity. You know?
Good luck with the PhD.
Well, thank you very much, Bill.
Thanks very much for the phone call. I wonder, Stephen Dunn, how long did you continue playing basketball?
Oh, well into my 50s, I think, and I played decently, I think, up until 40s. I played in the Eastern League after college for a year, and it ended by mutual agreement. I was the smallest guy in the league. And that was a surprise. I was even drafted by anybody.
Mm-hmm.
That the Eastern League was a good league then, just under the NBA. I think we were on the team that was the farm team for the St. Louis Hawks at the time.
Were you one of those shooting guards that Red Auerbach used to complain about, the New York City guards always trying to adjust their shot for windage since they grew up shooting on the playground?
I was a shooting guard. I don't know about the windage, but I was a shooting guard, yes.
And it's interesting, in your piece you wrote that at a certain point there became evident differences between the hot basketball player and the hot poet.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the things that remains striking to me, that if you make a shot that wins a game, everybody agrees that you did it, and you get rewarded, that people jump on you. If you write a wonderful poem, some people might think so. Many people might think not, and there's none of that visceral feeling, or there hasn't been for me, in doing that, in writing good poems. You don't find poets giving each other high fives in their garrets, you know.
The Pulitzer Prize must have been nice, though.
That was very nice. That was great. And still different, very different than... it was thrilling, in fact, when I got the phone call. But I still put shots that won games.
Well, Stephen Dunn, thank you very much for your time today, and we appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Stephen Dunn, the Pulitzer Prize-winning poet, author most recently of Here and Now Poems, and he joined us from his home in Frostburg, Maryland. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.